What's up, everybody? Chad Kalick here, and welcome back to the In a Crowded Room podcast for what is a very special episode, as this is episode number 200, which, everyone, I have to tell you that this means a lot to me. I remember when I began this podcast, for some reason in my head, the idea that the podcast could go on for 200 episodes. That was just a number that stuck with me as something that would be an indicator that we'd be doing something right. And not only are we approaching 15,000 subscribers, which is incredible, especially given the fact that for a year, I went through some pretty crazy stuff, being hospitalized and battling back through this recovery. And the podcast kept growing and kept growing. And you guys continued to support. And this became something that I just truly love to do. And when I first began the podcast, I wanted to do something different, because so many podcasts have this MTV style of editing and kind of this flash bang, Mr. Beast type of approach. I wanted to do something that was story-based and was really a kind of homage to Paul Harvey. And I think we've done a really good job of that. And you guys have repeatedly stated how much you love the episodes that involve heavy storytelling, which, as a documentarian, I love storytelling. It's essentially what I am as a storyteller. I basically witness things or experience them. And whether it's through the medium of film or through like a podcast, I share the stories with you all that I think are important. So the fact that we're 200 episodes in, that's just really, really cool. And I sincerely appreciate all of you. And before we get going and I tell you what we're going to talk about today, which is something that I've saved for a very long time because I wanted to do it on the 200th episode, which I'll get into in just a second. But first, I want to make a few announcements that I'm pretty excited about. The first is that way back in 2019, I had the chance while on tour to visit this incredible, incredible location known as the Old Jail in Crown Point, or the Crown Point Jail, aka the Dillinger Escape Jail, in which John Dillinger actually escaped from this jail. And it was a legendary story about this famous gangster. And I had the opportunity to go through there with everybody that I was on tour with at the time for Sir No Face, including Mr. Craig Powell and our good friend and then cameraman, Tender Steve, as many of you may remember. And I was blown away by this place. I was truly blown away by the authenticity of the building, the spookiness of it all, and the fact that there was crazy activity going on when we were just walking through the place. And I got to tell you how surprised I am by that, just because, when it comes to legitimate paranormal activity, it just rarely happens. But there were really weird things going on at this prison. And I was just super impressed, and I remember thinking, God, I wish I had, a good weekend to really enjoy this place and really investigate this Crown Point Jail. And it was really funny because at that time, we had been telling Steve, he had a lot of questions about ghost hunting, as he had never really done anything like that, but he had a great interest in it. So this was an opportunity for Steve to actually go through a haunted location, which he was completely freaked out from the jump. And I missed this footage that I'm going to show you here in a second. And it's hilarious footage. It's something legitimate that happened. And it was Justin, Craig Powell, who was on tour with us, and Steve. And I had already finished my walkthrough and heard all kinds of weird stuff. Like, we weren't set up to document activity. We were just like walking through. But, we had a few cameras. Steve had his camera. And when I got to the bottom floor, I just hear Steve freaking out and coming down the stairs, just being like, I am done. Get me out of here. No way, dude. This place is so haunted. And I was like, what happened? And he told me what happened. And as it turned out, again, he recorded this brief encounter which here's the footage right here. Check this out.
Dude, I swear I felt like vibration from that.
Yeah.
I could feel like a vibration from that, whatever it was.
Yeah.
Dude, what the fuck? Someone just stamped their feet. If that was you that did that or walked up earlier, let's do it.
I'm out of here.
Steve, don't run back, Steve. Steve, you've got to film. Which one did that come from, this one?
Dude, what the fuck come from the I don't know. Was that?
Jesus. Do it again. Do it again.
It was the same. You do that again?
That was big. That was big. Do it again. Do it twice. If it's you, do it twice.
Oh, God.
So as you can see, all it took was one loud bang that seemingly came from nowhere, and Steve was done. He was out. But the announcement is, and I am really excited about this, on Friday, September 6th, and Saturday, September 7th, I am returning to the Dillinger Escape Jail, as I like to call it, the old jail in Crown Point, Indiana, which I'm taking 20 of you with me. There are 20 available tickets to this event. AGH presents the Dillinger Escape Jail Ghost Hunt, which once again is on Friday, September 6th and Saturday, September 7th, which you can get your tickets right now by clicking the link in the description box below, which I know these tickets are going to go fast, so get yours right away. Many of you have said to me, you want me to do an investigation around the Chicagoland area. This is only 30 minutes from Chicago, Crown Point is. So not only is it a great location for my Chicagoland listeners, but if you want to travel, which we have travelers all the time that come to our events, there's always a quick and affordable flight to Chicago. Also, if you've never been to our events before and you want to come, but you're just kind of unsure because you don't know people or anything like that, trust me, the AGH event family are the most welcoming people you could ever imagine meeting. We have a blast, an absolute blast at these events. Once again, you can get your tickets right now by clicking the link in the description box below. Now, my next announcement is actually about my AGH channel and how things are going to run here in the future. I've noticed for a long time that podcasts like Joe Rogan or like Vlad TV, that when they do these long podcasts, they'll often break them up in pieces, like 10-minute pieces, 20-minute pieces, 5-minute pieces, and they release them in segments before they release the full actual episode. And I've always wondered why they do that, and after doing a little bit of research, I actually do understand why they do that. Because you could actually look and see the average time that people listen to a podcast before they leave it and kind of pick it up later. Because people listen on their way to work or just in leisure time, or I do that all the time where I'll listen to like 15, 20 minutes of a podcast, like during lunch or something, and I'll pick it up later. But sometimes people just want to get to the meat of a podcast, so these little segments kind of serve as that. And not only that, but there are just things that are often said deep into a podcast that I believe would make someone want to listen to the whole podcast, especially if they're new. So with that being the case, I'm not going to stop releasing the full episodes first. I'm definitely going to do that where I just release the entire episode like it is right now. But after that comes out, especially for new viewers and for people that only have short windows of time, I'm going to start releasing segments of those podcasts too, with a direct link to the full podcast in the description box below. A great example is Ryan's podcast. You know, that was nearly 2 hours long, and there's some really great things that are said that I know people who know him and who know my story would want to hear. So it's just a really cool way to isolate those segments after the full episode comes out and just release those segments for people in the hopes that they'll listen to the entire podcast. So I just wanted you to know why this is happening and what's up before I actually start doing it. So with all of that being said, my friends, let's get into episode number 200 as the story I'm about to tell you and the footage I'm about to show you blew my mind, which this has truly kept me up on many, many nights trying to figure out what in the hell actually happened. What am I talking about? Let's go back in time because I am talking about some incredible footage in American Ghost Hunter that I missed for over a decade. So to fully understand the context of what I'm talking about, we have to go all the way back to 2010 on day 3 of filming American Ghost Hunter. Now, when it comes to American Ghost Hunter, I think the reason that this film has really stood the test of time as something that people keep watching. And what I mean by that is, like, last year, Shiver, I think they're called, the online YouTube channel Shiver, they released American Ghost Hunter and quickly racked up like 500,000 views of the movie last year, which blew me away. But I think the reason that this film has stood the test of time is because there's so much that is unsaid. And the reason that is because the film ended up being something that it was never intended to be. When I do documentaries, so they are authentic, I definitely have starting points, meaning I know we're gonna, on day one, we're going to go to this place and we're going to shoot this conversation or this interview, or we're going to go to this place in time and I'm going to, you know, talk about a memory or something important historically to the story. But we never outline a full story because I don't want to know where it's going to go, okay? But I could have never imagined where American Ghost Hunter was going to go. In the beginning, if someone would have said to me, hey, we're going to make this documentary where you are going to have to confront your mother and dive into, you know, your family's, like, you know, darkest details in history. It's just like, that's so incredibly uncomfortable. And I don't think anybody would have agreed to it unless it went down the way it did, which is that it just happened. And the part that I'm going to talk about here with you guys, the segment that really just blew me away, you know, at the time that it happened, to the point where, as you guys saw, I was speechless, is when we went to my parents' house to interview my father. What you have to understand is there was no plan whatsoever to interview my mother. The reason for that is because, given my mother's past with the possessionary issues and the things that she had gone through, I initially didn't think that she would want to be on camera, and I didn't really need her to be, because my father was going to speak about kind of everything that we had went through. And that's all I really needed him to do, was just kind of like a surface level discussion on how we wound up in Persia, how we wound up in that house, and you know, what we all experienced while being in the house. To that point, true as the film clearly, you know, kind of dictates, is that I had no idea, no idea whatsoever, that my family was still going through these paranormal things. I didn't know that my brother was having issues until right before we started shooting. I had no idea that my mother was still having, you know, full-blown possessionary issues. My father, and it was done out of love, it wasn't because they were trying to lie to me and fuck me over. My father just wanted me to have my own life, and he didn't want me to be anchored to this darkness that was going on there. I wish he wouldn't have done that, obviously. I understand it. Again, I know it was totally out of love. But a couple days before we were going there to interview my father, things were just weird when I would call home. And I'm telling you all this because you need to know this before we get to the footage that I'm going to show you. But what I mean by weird is that my mother kept telling me that she wanted everybody to stay for dinner, and she was going to make this big meal, and she had all these things planned, and she was going to go over, like, you know, like my scrapbooks and childhood photos and like all this stuff. And I was like, no, that's not going to happen. We've literally got like a half hour to interview Dad, and then we're gone. But she was insistent that we all have to stay, we all have to eat. And it was really weird about the eating thing. She just kept saying, like, everybody here has to eat. You can't leave without eating. And it got really, really weird. Now, my mother has a very violent past. So before we even went to my house, I was so uncomfortable with it. I even talked to my father, too. And I was like, is she okay? What is going on? And he's like, yeah, I don't know. She's acting kind of weird about all this. And suddenly she was telling him that he could not do the interview unless she was present. Now, initially, that wasn't the case. Initially, he said that she was going to stay inside and he wanted that to happen, and he would come out and do the interview with me. Now, usually when I do interviews for documentaries, I definitely want the person alone because I don't want them influenced by anybody else. So I was not happy when I showed up, and my mother was literally, telling me loudly in front of everybody that you're not interviewing your father alone. And if you do, I'll shut this whole fucking thing down, and you'll be out of here, And I'm sitting here going, Jesus, man. So I have to interview my dad with my mother glaring over his shoulder. This sucks. But it's like, that's the only way we could do it. That's that. But before we got there, I had met with the camera crew and I said, guys, listen, I don't know what's going to happen. My mother has a crazy temper. She has a history of violence. And, we just need to really get in there, get the interview, and get out. I made it clear that nobody was to enter my parents' house, that everybody would have to use the bathroom or get drinks or anything they wanted before we got to the house. I actually had the opportunity to speak to my dad before I got there, and I explained this to him too. And I said, let's go do the interview in the backyard, and we'll keep everybody out of the house. And, that's that. That's why. And no one ever really asked this, which it surprises me if they don't. Why at my parents' house were we interviewing my father in the backyard? And why was my mother sitting back there? I mean, it's their home, right? Now, later on with Lorraine, we went inside the house. But before then, we're outside. That's because, to my knowledge, we're going to do an interview with my father and we're going to leave. Again, I don't want my mother having access to anybody or the ability to kind of like make anybody stay or kind of go down a track that she wants to take him down. I want them to just work. That's it. And then we're out of there, because we did. We had another interview set up right after my father's in a town 30 minutes away. So right when we get there, Ryan is like, shit, dude, I got to use the bathroom. So he was the only person that went in to use the bathroom. He entered my parents' house. And that's when you see him say, there's a quick segment where he says, Chad, listen, I just went to the bathroom and some weird stuff was going on in the bathroom. He said something like shook when he was in there. And he was really freaked out.
I went to the bathroom to take a piss. And as I was taking a piss, I thought I heard like the slow growl. And so I kind of stopped. And then I heard it again. Very loud, very distinct growling sound. I first thought maybe it was a truck passing by. No, this was a growl. And they have like these glass sliding doors for the bathroom. I swear to God, dude, they shook like something was there. So I know we're about to do this interview with your dad.
After that happened, we again went to the entire crew and said, listen, if you have to use the bathroom at all, and if you haven't already used it, if you have to, then leave and go do it now. There's a gas station blocks away. We're like, but nobody enters the house. Nobody accepts a meal. Nobody asks for a water or a Coke. Like, literally, we're going to go set up. My dad got us the power grid and everything to use from the shed outside. We're going to shoot his interview, and we're out of there. All right? So when I show up, like I said, my mother's just pissed off to hell, because right when I show up, she's like, oh, so, I have made this food for everybody. I got this. And I'm like, Mom, I have told you 50 times, we are not eating. We are not staying. We are going to be here for 30 minutes. We're going to interview Dad, and we're out of here. And again, that's when she said, we're not doing it without me. I'm going to be right there. I'm going to be watching it. So the whole thing got really, really weird. And I was super uncomfortable. And that's when I just said, listen, let's interview my dad. Let's start. Let's go. Everybody's cleared out of the house. And you need to understand that. The only person that has walked in that house is me. When I first got there, I went inside to say hello. And Ryan went inside to use the bathroom once, in which he said, there's something weird going on there. The bathroom shook. And that's when we went around to the entire crew again and said, nobody inside the house for any reason whatsoever. And just kind of, reestablish that, which everybody was like, yeah, sure. And to be honest, the entire crew was freaked out because the energy the entire time was so bizarre. So we get everything set up. As you saw, we started interviewing my father. And then at one point, you'll see that the power goes down. When that goes down, you see the whole crew is outside. Everything is plugged into the shed. My dad has a power shed out there. We never did understand or figure out why that happened, but it happened. It just, for some reason, right as we started to talk about the possessionary stuff with my mother, which I could just see. I just know her. I know her body language. I can see that she was just, her blood was boiling under her skin. Right as that happened, that's when literally simultaneously all three of our cameras just dropped, just power outage. Now, later, we found out that there's a primary cable that connected the power source to all the cables that were running things, and that shorted out. It was a brand new cable as well, so it shouldn't have shorted out, but it did. So we replaced it. We powered back up. We got to the part of the interview where my dad was talking about when he was burned and my mother going to the hospital and putting her hand on his head and him feeling like he was drawing energy from her. Now, I become very emotional in this scene. And I'm not necessarily emotional because of what he's saying. I know the story. I lived it. I was there. I become emotional because my father just doesn't show emotion. He's so old school like that, like when it comes to crying and things. Like, again, you know, my dad was burned over 70% of his body, third degree, and I never saw him cry over that. So if my dad is going to cry, it's something that hurts him deeply. And if you know my feelings about my father, I've spoken about him on this podcast many times. I've said it many times. He's the only hero I've ever known. I mean, he is. I looked up to him in more ways than you can imagine. He was just somebody that I just wanted to be as good of a person as he is. And unfortunately, I lost my father, as you guys know, in 2021, and there's not a day that goes by that I don't think about him. I often think about this moment, you know, and during this interview, because it shocked me. There's a time, you know, when he's talking, and you'll see it here in a second, where as he's talking, he just wells up inside and he holds back tears. And he makes this kind of gulping sound where he's holding his breath. And it's because, again, he's just old school and he's just, my dad just grew up in a place and time where men don't cry, you know? And he started to. And I have edited this scene and watched this footage 1,000 times. Whenever you make a film, I always laugh because by the time I release a film of mine, I'll never watch it again. I have seen every ounce of footage thousands of times, and I have watched that film thousands of times, that by the time it makes its way to the public, I've lived it already, and I've seen it so many times. But I have seen American Ghost Hunter in many different settings, because we toured with it, and I watched it many times on tour. But last year, it had been probably 7 or 8 years before I had last seen American Ghost Hunter. And I remember it was during my early recovery when Laura brought me in my computer when I was at the hospital so I could just watch something. And I came across one of those YouTube sites that had released the film. And I put it on and just hit it and started watching it for some reason. And it was just really kind of a step back in time. It was a cool way to see my father, who was, like I said, he was gone, and I really could have used him in my life at that time, which I know he's always with me, but sometimes, you know, just good to see him and hear their voice. And I started watching this scene, and I'm going to play this scene for you right now because there was something that happened that when it happened, yeah, my heart just sank. I was just like, oh my God. And, yeah, it's wild. So anyways, check this out, guys.
I think it's safe to say that with you, church and religion wasn't like the first thing in your life before the accident. Is that accurate?
That's accurate, right? But this will bring you to God, you know, come to Jesus meeting real quick. You know, so you look around and you're sitting there and you're saying, you know, if I don't get some help, I'm going to die. You know, because you just know you're not going to make it. So your mom would come and she would stand.
You all right?
Behind the bed. She would stand behind the bed and she would put her hand on my forehead. I just remember drawing, I could feel I'd be drawing energy from her.
Did you see it? If not, let me rewind it and play it for you again. Here you go.
I think it's safe to say that with you, church and religion wasn't like the first thing in your life before the accident. Is that accurate?
That's accurate, right? But this will bring you to God, come to Jesus meeting real quick. You know, so you look around and you're sitting there and you're saying, you know, if I don't get some help, I'm going to die. You know, because you just know you're not going to make it. So your mom would come and she would stand.
You all right?
Behind the bed. She would stand behind the bed and she would put her hand on my forehead. I just remember drawing, I could feel I'd be drawing energy from her.
If you look over my dad's shoulder, right as he gets emotional, you'll see a black figure inside my parents' house walk by the door, then turn around and come right back again.
So your mom would come and she would stand.
You all right?
Behind the bed. So your mom would come and she would stand.
You all right?
Behind the bed. So your mom would come and she would stand.
You all right?
Behind the bed.
And what really freaks me out is on the return, after it walks by the first time and returns and it comes back, the shape reminds me of Lorraine Warren. But what's really weird about that is Lorraine was not even scheduled to come to Iowa for another week. And what's also very bizarre is it's just a solid black figure that walks by and walks by again. Now, I can't prove this to you other than to tell you that there's a reason we're all in the backyard. There's a reason why nobody's in the house. And when we were filming, there would most definitely be nobody in the house for any reason whatsoever. And furthermore, right after this happens, as we continue the interview, this is when my mother blows up and she goes inside the house, and I follow her inside the house. My dad starts coming behind me and Ryan stops my dad and says, "Can we go inside to film?" And he says, "I don't know. Let me see if that's okay." Ryan then goes around the house and comes to the front door. And that's when he starts filming us sitting in the kitchen. If somebody else, another human being, was in the house, they would have been in the house at that moment. But as you can clearly see, it's only me, my father, and my mother. So my question is, what in the fuck was walking around in our house at that time? And why did the shape of the body and the head and the hairdo appear to resemble Lorraine Warren? In my opinion, that's because we are all witnessing the demonic phenomena known as doppelganger, which sometimes is to trick you, sometimes it's to scare you, sometimes it's to confuse you. But I also find it very unique that this happened right when my dad became overwhelmingly emotional.
I think it's safe to say that with you, church and religion wasn't like the first thing in your life before the accident. Is that accurate?
That's accurate, right? But this will bring you to God, come to Jesus meeting real quick. You know, so you look around and you're sitting there and you're saying, you know, if I don't get some help, I'm going to die. You know, because you just know you're not going to make it. So your mom would come and she would stand.
You all right?
Behind the bed. She would stand behind the bed and she would put her hand on my forehead. I just remember drawing, I could feel I'd be drawing energy from her.
On my life, guys, there was nobody in that house. So when I finally saw this, again, I got sick to my stomach. I was like, oh my God. which to me just proved, you know, even more to me that everything that was occurring with my mother that time was overwhelmingly legitimate. Now, for what it's worth, I've asked myself a million times, like, why am I just now noticing this? I've watched this footage thousands, literally, guys, thousands of times. Why did I not see this until after my father had passed away, until after I'm, like, watching it, you know, for the millionth time? And I think it's just because my father, again, he just means so much to me. And this scene with him and his outpouring of emotion has always been so powerful to me that I always focused in on him. I just never took the time to gaze over into the house because subconsciously I knew there's nobody in the house. There's nobody that's going to be in the house. Everyone was ordered to stay out of the house. At the time we're filming, everyone's accounted for. We had no extra crew members on the American Ghost Hunter film crew. It was an 8-man crew. It was incredibly thin. I mean, everybody had, you know, at least 2 jobs, if not 3. It's just how it is when you're filming independently. There was just nobody to be in that house. And, you know, the fact that it resembles Lorraine to me just said it all. I think we're looking at doppelganger. What you guys didn't see is that, you know, when we were done filming, yeah, it was incredibly, incredibly uncomfortable. Suddenly, you know, my mother, after having, you know, she falls down in the kitchen as you guys, or the living room as you guys saw, and Ryan does the holy water thing, and you'll see sharp edits in there, and then we leave. Well, for probably a good 10, 15 minutes, she still was standing there trying to get us to stay. And I think that's kind of what that falling down stuff was about. Like, she had tried asking 50 times, tried to corner me into making us all stay, blew up and screamed at me. And when I went inside the house, said some things to me that I can't even repeat to you guys on here without this whole thing being taken down. And then when none of that worked and she falls down and starts talking like a little kid and stuff. And God, that was so fucking uncomfortable, man. Which is, you know, why I left. And you hear Ryan in the car say, "Do you want to talk about this?" And I tell him, you know, "No, not right now, in a while." It's because my mind was just, you know, like I said, this was not the film that I had planned to make. It's not the film that I intended to make. But, you know, after thinking about it a lot, the main reason that I went through with it is it was a conversation with my dad. As I said, "Dad, listen, where I'm at in life right now, how I've come across Lorraine, how I've come across Ryan, all these opportunities, everything, like, I feel like I was led down a road here to do this. And as scary as it is to me, I don't want to let the fact that I'm scared, you know, be a reason to step off this road if, you know, I believe that God had some, you know, hand in putting me on that path." In which my father's response was, "You know, follow your heart. You know, do what you think you need to do. I have your back. I will be honest about anything that you ask. And, you know, this door is open for you whenever you want to come and whatever you want to do." And, you know, true to his word, he had my back. He stood his ground. He was honest about everything that happened. And, you know, he promised me that he would make sure that she did not hurt anybody, that she was not violent to anybody, that if he had to step in and physically, you know, constrain her, he would. He did. He made sure that, you know, things never got to that level. And believe me, when I went in to confront her at the end, I thought, this is where this is going. You know, that's why I looked at Lorraine at the end and said, "Lorraine, you can't ask me to do this. That's my mother. You want me to incite the fuck out of her until she flips out?" What I'm thinking is, look, this is going to get incredibly violent, and I don't know who's going to be on the end of that violence, or if I go in there and go at her full throttle and nothing happens, then I'm going to come off like some, you know, incredibly disturbed bully that's just, you know, beating up on my mom for no reason, emotionally I'm talking. And then what does my dad do at that point? If he sees that, you know, this isn't constructive and it's not helping, you know, what, where do we go from there? I mean, it was just a terrible scenario to be in. And it was one of the times in life where I can truly say, you know, I always relate things to song lyrics. They just, I feel like they just explain things so much better. But it reminds me of that, that Modest Yahoo song where he says, I'm the arrow, you're my bow, shoot me forth and I will go. And that's how I felt in that moment. At the end there, it was just like, okay, I am going to do, you know, what you tell me to do, and I'm going to go in the direction that you fire me. So let's do this. And thankfully, it worked out really well, and a really dark chapter of my life became a positive thing that has affected many, many people around the world to this day. And it's why that film remains something that I'm very proud of, because a lot of really good people had to give a lot of themselves to make that happen. And, you know, believe me, it wasn't for money. It wasn't for fame or anything like that. You know, we didn't even intend on making that film. And that's the film we made. So, which I just wanted to share that with you guys. Having said that, much love, everybody. I truly hope you enjoyed this episode of the In a Crowded Room podcast, number 200. And here's the 200 more, my friends. I will be back very soon with another episode of the In a Crowded Room podcast. Until then, much love, everybody. Take care of yourself, and I will be back soon. All the best.